Mike Miller joins us again, the economics professor at Western Washington University, professor emeritus over at DePaul. Michael, thanks for giving us some of your time.
Oh, it's my pleasure every time there, John.
Likewise, sir. So President Trump, former President Trump spoke last night and talked about a variety of things, including touting the economy that he reigned over and the one that he wants to marshal in yet again. And he said that what Joe Biden's been doing is terrible and what he was doing was great. And you would expect that. I'm sure Joe Biden will say that what he's doing is great and what Donald Trump did was terrible. The Washington Post posted 17 charts that compared the two economies. And I know you had a chance to look at that. Let's start just overall. What did you think of what the Post did and how do you kind of score it?
I thought they did a pretty decent job in presenting the data that they did. I didn't understand several of the metrics that they chose. For example, how a president would influence the jobs created by county. I don't know what that, I just don't get that. And they did some things on inequality that I don't think that presidents would have much of an effect on.
Yeah.
Well, and one thing I did want to, you know, I mentioned to producer Pete that presidents are given much more credit than they should be in terms of whether an economy is going well or an economy is going poorly. And but I get their point, because the two candidates are saying that my economy was better than your economy, and so let's take a look and see what the data show us. And it's a mixed bag. But I'll tell you what, if you take out the effects of COVID, because COVID was a once-in-a-lifetime event, which will just muck everything up.
Yeah.
The economy under Trump was doing just fine until COVID. It was actually quite impressive. And the economy since COVID under Biden, with one exception, and that exception is inflation, is doing quite good. So both presidents, in a sense, have overseen an American economy that is pretty impressive, with the exception of that one thing, inflation.
Yeah, right. And it's funny
and
because...
that's the Fed.
And that's the Fed. I'm sorry, what did you say about the Fed?
That's and the Fed is the main culprit behind that inflation. It's not something that presidents can say, well, I'm going to stop inflation. They control the money supply and interest rates and so forth is the Federal Reserve. It's not the president.
Yeah. And yet, the two of them will say, well, inflation was worse under you or it was worse under me.
Of course.
And I did notice that while Donald Trump said last night that inflation has never been as bad as it is now, that's just not true, right?
No. I think both of us are old enough to remember the early 1980s, and inflation hit as high as about, on an annual rate, about 13%. So it 40 years ago, which was the last time we had a really bad inflationary period, it was worse than it is now. And that was what was unfortunate is that was simply the ultimate outcome of an entire decade's bad policy by the Fed, which led to rising again inflation. It was broken by a guy named Paul Volcker. And between the mid-1980s and the COVID onset of COVID, inflation really has not been a major player in the American economy. And we went through the period, went up to 9%, not the worst on record for sure. It has come down, not as far as the Fed wants it, but we're making progress.
Yeah.
So it's not the worst ever. No.
Well, the first graph that they demonstrate is inflation versus wages, which seems to me to be an appropriate consideration. If the wages are higher than inflation, then maybe that comparison is more important than just what inflation is. And in Trump's presidency, inflation ran at 7.8%. Wages grew 15.5%. So wages grew almost double the pace of inflation. Joe Biden's presidency, inflation has totaled over these years just over 19%, and wages have been just a little bit higher still. But the disparity, wages to inflation, was more favorable when Donald Trump was president. What else should we think about that?
You know, that, and as I mentioned to Pete, if I had to pinpoint, you know, if you ask the average American what they think of the economy now, it's quite negative. And in some sense, that doesn't make sense because we have full employment. The economy is growing the way it's supposed to grow. It's not growing too fast and it's not growing too slowly. So those two metrics alone tell us that the economy is doing well. Inflation is coming down. But what has hurt households is that they've gotten raises over the past couple of years, but the inflation has been worse. So when it comes to going to the store to buy food for the household and getting insurance on the house and getting insurance on the cars and so forth, that increase, that spike in inflation has been extremely damaging to the average household. And that's what they're reacting to.
Yeah.
That's why inflation, you don't think of it as being so damaging as like unemployment can ruin a person's life and a household's life. But inflation, it eats away at the entire economy. And that's why the Fed has to be so very careful to not let this happen again.
Would it have mattered who the president was?
Now, I'm not convinced it would have. Let's say Mr. Trump had won the election. The only difference I can see, I'm not convinced that Trump would have come up with one additional stimulus package like Mr. Biden did. And part of the inflation that I'm putting on the shoulders of the Fed was because the Fed had to fund that deficit spending, which led to an increase in the money supply, which fueled the inflation. So I'm convinced, though, that inflation would have gone up to at least 5, 6, maybe even 7% had Mr. Trump won the election.
I have another question.
So he would be the one being attacked.
We're on the Wintrust Business Lunch with economist Mike Miller. Mike, the president talks about tariffs. That's a way to keep imports from coming into the country. We don't have to buy Chinese cars. And it's a way to protect American jobs. What would the impact be of high tariffs at the border?
Exactly the opposite of what he wants. I wish I could somehow get the guy and take him into a room and say, look, what the heck's wrong with you? This is not the way to carry out international trade, and this is not the way to raise money for the federal government through this kind of taxation. Economists are pretty much of one mind, which is a surprise for economists, on this issue of tariffs, that tariffs create losses. They don't create jobs, because you have to recognize that the price, for example, of the Chinese EV would go up, but that means that you and I are going to pay higher prices for that EV than would be the case. We will lose that efficient product that we all would like to have, an EV that is at a reasonable price. The amount of money that is gained by the government is a tiny, tiny fraction of what the government needs to operate. And so if I just don't get it. I don't know. And Mr. Biden, we thought that maybe when he became president, he would take some of the Trump tariffs and remove them, but he didn't. And so it's both parties are putting more emphasis on tariffs than I think should be the case. And I'm rather disappointed that he, in fact, is going to try to expand this behavior rather than contract it.
Who pays the tariffs?
Well, it can come into three different places. You and I, in terms of the price, will pay a higher price, so you and I pay it. The foreign producer can take a loss. In other words, the tax will be paid, and then they will have a smaller profit. So the foreign producer loses. Now, that's not necessarily a good thing. I mean, it's an inefficient use of scarce resources. The most recent study I have seen of the tariffs imposed by Mr. Trump on Chinese goods and so forth in 2017, around there, showed that ultimately you and I paid the tariff, which is exactly the case. And certainly it was not a major factor in creating new employment. That comes from entrepreneurship.
Hold on, Mike. Yeah, I need to ask you about that, because if tariffs keep foreign goods from coming into the country, then doesn't that encourage us to buy American? I think that's what they were cheering about last night, too. So now I got to go buy a Ford EV, and that'll be, or Tesla. That'll be good for America,
Tesla,
right?
That certainly would be the case. But then since the price would be higher than it would have been otherwise, that leaves you with less money than to buy other things.
Wait a minute.
Yes,
but no, wait. But I'm going to buy an American made. I'm not going to buy – the tariff is on the foreign product coming in, so now I'm only going to buy American made goods.
I got you. But you're only looking at the jobs which are protected within the auto industry. You're not looking at the jobs which are being lost in the industries where you don't have money to buy the stuff because you had to put more money into the higher priced car. So in other words, if I have to pay more for steel or I have to pay more for a car than I was going to otherwise, yes, whoever produced that good, they kept their jobs. But the people who work in the industries where I would have spent that extra money, I don't spend it there anymore, and they don't get their jobs. Maybe I don't go out to the restaurant as often because I have to pay more for my car. Well, that means three or four servers won't have jobs, or one or two cooks won't have jobs.
But I understand that, Michael. But is it true, then, that I'm going to pay more for even the domestically made car because there are fewer cars on the market and a limited amount of dollars are going to chase fewer goods and the price will go up? So even domestically produced cars would go up. Is that it?
Right. Yes. And let's say that the price that we had was $100, and now with the tariff, the Chinese product is $125, just to make them simple numbers. Well, that would allow then the American producer to raise it from $100 to, say, $110. They can get the higher price. So you and I end up paying more because of that tariff than we would have otherwise. You and I pay the tariff. And that's why economists are so insistent that this is a very inefficient way to raise revenue. It does not add to overall employment. It may affect the employment of industries, yes, but it does not add to overall employment in the economy.
What do you?
And I just go ahead.
I'm going to change the subject because we're short of time, and there's 17 different charts that you can find at WGNRadio.com on the John Williams page, the article we are talking about. When Donald Trump was president, the S&P stood at 2,300. When he left office, the S&P was at 3,500, and that's after that remarkable dip when the pandemic hit. So Trump took, or the markets went in Trump's term, from 2,300 to 3,500. Under Joe Biden, the S&P has gone from 3,500 to 5,600, maybe down a little bit today. But if you subtract the dip for the pandemic, it's pretty much a straight line of a 45-degree angle rising left to right. So I guess the question is, who lays claim to the economy or markets are doing better?
I think the American people, American entrepreneurs, and American business. It's not the president. Again, I think presidents have a minor what they create is a tone. A tone of regulation, a tone of whether or not they're trying to influence or create more entrepreneurship. Are they willing to protect the rule of law to make sure that contracts are upheld and so forth? That's the most important thing that a president can do. And then Congress is the one actually that controls the purse. When you hear about the deficits under presidents, it's really Congress who ultimately controls the purse of the United States. And Congress has to be held accountable for the various taxing and spending behavior that goes on. So again, I think presidents, they're presidents while these things occur, but they have, on the whole, relatively little influence on any of these things.
Michael Miller's an economics professor at Western Washington University. Once DePaul. Nice to talk to you, Michael. If you come through the city again, visit with us in our studios, okay?
Oh, I would love to do that. Next time I'm in town, I'll do that.
I would love to see you in the studio. And now we're out of time, but at WGNRadio.com, we'll repost this conversation. And the chart we're referring to is on my page. Thank you, Michael.
You're welcome, John.
Joining us now is Allison Rigsby, past president of the Lake Zurich Lions Club. Alpine Fest starts in about 5 hours. Is that right, Allison?
It does indeed. Our 79th Alpine Fest starts in 5 hours.
So tell me a little bit about this. What is Alpine Fest? What do you all do?
Well, Alpine Fest is one of the biggest events that we have with the Lions Club. It is a carnival that, as I said, we've been running for 79 years. Started just after World War II. It's run by the Lions Club and a cast of thousands, really. Many, many volunteers come into play to make this happen. And it's a carnival. We have over 14 rides and attractions and a large beer garden with live music in a 150 by 80 tent, which will keep you out of the sun and any weather, which thanks to listening to WGN, I don't think we're going to have any nasty weather for a change.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, you're right. The weather is actually going to be really good for this. It seems like the more I read about this, the bigger this thing gets. This is more than the average carnival, though, isn't it?
It's a big event. As I said, we have that large beer garden and a live band stage. We even have a bags tournament going on Saturday and Sunday from that's being run by an outfit organization for us. So it'll be a professionally run tournament. All sorts of fun stuff we have on Saturday and Sunday from noon to four. We have all you can ride wristbands for the kids. So there's rides for all ages, little ones up to adults that like those scary ones.
Yeah, no kidding. And talk a little bit about the music. I know you've got music for three of the nights anyway, maybe four. Just give me a little bit of the rundown. What kind of music are you going to have there?
Oh, we have great music. On Friday, we have Hot Rocks and also a really big local favorite, Mike and Joe, always brings out a big crowd for that one. On Saturday, we have a local talent showcase, which is kind of fun that we put together. And we have pre-scheduled local talent that will get up on stage and share their musical abilities with us. We also have the Electric Cars on Saturday and Mr. Blotto, another huge local draw. Lastly, we also have another local talent showcase and also have Kevin Purcell and the Root Doctors, which are all of these bands are incredibly talented, and we're really excited about our lineup this year.
Got it. And so it's the Lake Zurich Lions Club, and it's Alpine Fest. Where exactly is where do you do it? Where do I park?
No, that's a good question. We're in downtown Lake Zurich, right on Main Street. Our actual Lions Den is at 81 Main Street, but you can't miss it if you drive into town. You'll see our big beer tent, and you'll also see all those rides sticking up. And you can pretty much park on any of the side streets. The American Legion Hall on Lions Drive has parking. Our local hardware store on Route 22 and Old Rand has parking. And also through the neighborhoods around there, including at the high school and at the local elementary school right on Midlothian Road. So there's plenty of...
You have a parade on Sunday too, right?
We do indeed, our Alpine Day Parade. It starts at, what time do we start at? We start at 11:30. Oh, goodness, 11 or 11:30? 11:30 on Sunday.
Yeah.
We have music. We have local businesses. We have a lot of kids groups. And any kids that come out for this parade, which starts on Whitney Road, and it runs down Route 22 to Main Street. It ends at our Lions Park right at the festival. Any kids that come out for that parade better bring a little bag with them to collect some of the candy that's thrown, because this is a fun parade, and they'll end up with a whole pile of goodies to take home with them.
Starts this afternoon. Actually, it's 6 o'clock tonight. Goes to 11:30. It goes to 11:30 tomorrow night. Sunday, the parade at 11:30. Things wrap up Sunday at 6. Everything is at lakezurich.org. Mm-hmm. And you've got good weather this weekend. Have a great fundraising and fun weekend.
We do. And we are so grateful to you for letting us share this event. It's really, it's our biggest event of the year, and it's very near and dear to our hearts. We are all about giving back to our community. So this is a great way for us to do it. And as I said, we've been doing it a long, long time.
Yeah, back to World War II, you said. So that's 79
Absolutely.
Years, right?
Yeah, it actually went a little bit before that. It was run by the Volunteer Fire Department in town, and we took it over, as I said, 79 years ago. And, it's a fun event, and it's a great event for the community, but we do good stuff with this, any monies that are raised. We support all sorts of things from our local food pantry. We buy eyeglasses for any residents or any local students that might not be able to afford them. Hearing aids if we have residents in need. And we support, what else do? We support Camp Lions, which is a camp for hearing and visually impaired children and adults. Juvenile diabetes. We make lunches for Special Olympics. And any other needs of the community. They ask us, and we support. Our motto is we serve, and that's what we do. And that's what this event helps us do.
Allison Rigsby, past president, Lake Zurich Lions Club. Have a great weekend, and thanks for the heads up on that.
Thank you.
More business news. Here's Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. United Airlines isn't the only Chicago-area company impacted by the CrowdStrike outage. McDonald's and Metra also reported problems. Three Metra Union Pacific routes had delays that the transit agency blamed on the CrowdStrike outage. An update of the cybersecurity program took down systems being run on Microsoft computers and devices. It's unclear how McDonald's was impacted, but it reportedly involved customer service. The North Michigan Avenue retail corridor is losing another business. Sephora is closing its Water Tower store at the end of this month. Cranes reports the cosmetics retailer is closing the 5,000-square-foot space on Water Tower's fifth floor. Employees are being transferred to other locations. It's unclear why Sephora is closing the store. The company operates other locations in downtown Chicago in Block 37 and at 108 North State. There's a Sephora just a block south of Water Tower at 605 North Michigan. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Here's the business of food with Steve Alexander.
Thank you, and it's a Mr. Fizz Friday. Jim Fizzell, our gardening guru, is with us again. Hi, Jim.
Hi, Steve. It's good to be with you again this week. Incidentally, when we did these shows with Orion years ago, we used to ask people to send in questions they had, and I'd be glad to do that here with you on various occasions when there's nothing really urgent to talk about.
Sure. People can email me, Steve Alexander at WGNradio.com, and I'll get the questions to you.
Good. Be glad to do that.
Okay, and before you get cranking, let me thank the Chevy Silverado and ChevyDriveChicago.com for sponsoring us today. There's never been a better time to put a Silverado in your toolbox. Okay, sir, take it away.
Before we get started on anything else, I want to mention the cicadas. They're done laying eggs. The damage is done. The eggs are actually in slits in the twigs on your trees and shrubs. They're going to hatch. Nymphs are going to drop to the ground, and they're going to dig in, find a root where they're going to live for the next 17 years. Damaged twigs are either going to heal over or they're going to die back and fall off. So you don't need to do anything until you see how far the twigs are going to die back. Then you can do some trimming. Now, there's a lot of water. In fact, we had 4 inches of rain beginning of this week. While the things are drying out, there's still a lot of stuff to do. It's time for records and for planning. You need to map out where everything is growing this year, especially in the vegetable garden, so you can plan for rotations on things like tomatoes and things that we need to rotate to keep them from getting diseases. At the beginning of each gardening season, I draw a diagram of the garden, and also I start a journal and I record the successes, weather conditions, watering, fertilizer, and so forth, varieties that are doing well, when they came in, the pests and so forth. But even more important, list the things that didn't grow the way you wanted to them, the failures, because if you don't list those things, you're going to do it again. Make a diagram of your vegetable garden, know the varieties, and identify them. It might be useful to take a photograph if you have a chance to do that.
Mr. Fizz, our gardening guru, Jim Fizzell. On the food calendar, well, kind of, it's National Daiquiri Day. I'm Steve Alexander. That's the Business of Food on 720 WGN.
Let's talk a little bit about Epic Burger. And joining us on the line is the CEO of Epic Burger, David Grossman. David, thanks for joining us on the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Happy Friday. How are you today?
We're doing really well. It is a happy Friday. We've got good weather and lots of things going on in our city. I wanted to talk to you about two things. One, your business and how it's grown, and then also a fundraiser you had recently, which raised a lot of money in the name of your late daughter, which is so sad, and also at least you guys are doing something positive in Hallie's name. First, tell me about Epic Burger. What's the business model? What do you all do?
Yep, so Epic Burger, founded right here in Chicago in 2008. We're celebrating our 16th year. We are Chicago's original smash burger. We serve quality burgers, fries, shakes, chicken sandwiches, turkey burgers, Beyond Burgers. Currently have 9 locations, and we've got 2 more under construction, one in Bloomington, Illinois, that is actually going to open in the next, let's say, 10 days, and then the other in Champaign, Illinois. So 3 stores in the city, and then the other 6 currently are in the suburbs, and probably have plans to franchise maybe in 2025, but right now these are all company-owned stores. and we're selling some burgers.
And what a coincidence in college towns. If you guys can't sell burgers in Bloomington, Normal, or Champaign, Urbana, you're doing something wrong. But it sounds like you're doing a lot right. What's the secret? I mean, these smash burgers are kind of the thing right now. What is that, and how do you do it differently?
Yeah, it does seem like it's become really popular lately. It's really, you know, we take our beef, which starts with quality beef. We get all of our beef from Creekstone Farms in Kansas. And the way we smash it on the grill and increase the surface of the patty, it creates like a sear. It keeps in the juices, adds flavor. You know, the burger kind of separates a little bit, and we get these kind of crumbled edges that really just gives the meat flavor and color and texture and taste. And that's what makes our burger unique and special.
Yeah. What made you decide to go down this lane? I mean, there's plenty of people selling hamburgers out there. It's kind of a crowded market. It seems to be going well for you. Were you certain that there was a niche in the market? What got you into this?
Yeah, I mean, obviously burgers are something that, you know, everybody loves. I think I heard a statistic that people consume 50 billion hamburgers a year. So, yeah, we wanted to just, you know, serve a better burger. And I know the better burger category is also crowded. It's just not the, you know, the big giants out there that sell burgers. You know, there's others that do a better burger. But we wanted to try to create what we called a more mindful burger. And serve, you know, again, quality beef. All of our beef is halal certified. Our turkey is quality. Our chicken is also halal. Our hot dog is halal. So it's all about serving a quality product. Our ice cream is all natural and organic. We don't use any hormones or any additives. There's no nitrates in anything. So we thought if someone's going to eat a burger, you might as well eat an Epic Burger. If you're going to do it, might as well be a better one.
Locations throughout Chicagoland. I asked producer Pete, I said, are you guys everywhere? Because it seems like you're pretty big, but you're really just kind of a Chicagoland, and now down to Bloomington and Champaign. You're kind of new. Do you have expansion plans across the country?
Yeah, well, I wouldn't say across the country, but we are looking in Nashville. We've looked at a couple of sites in Florida, a couple of sites in Milwaukee. But after we get these next two open downstate, we will look to expand outside of this market. And we're also continuing to look to grow, you know, within the market. There, you know, Chicago's a great city, big city, great suburbs, and certainly there's a lot of room for us to grow here as well. But, yeah, we, like I said, we'd like to franchise maybe starting next year, and that would certainly allow us to open up in other markets way far away from Chicago.
Got it. Last Sunday, you had a kickoff fundraiser for Hallie 225. What is that?
So my daughter, Hallie, she was born on February 25th, which I know your listeners are smart, but that is 225.
I wondered. That answers that. Yeah.
And she was actually born at 2:25 p.m. So 25 has always been a very, very special number for her since she was a, you know, since she was a baby. And unfortunately, she lived until she was 25. So she lived 225, born on 225, at 225. So we started this charity called Hallie 225. And obviously, people can donate $2.25. We want to try to, you know, raise money to offer academic scholarships to students in need. We want to offer camp scholarships. And we want to offer medical assistance to those who are experiencing, you know, various medical conditions that can't afford to pay. So we've got applications set up on our website for people to apply for a scholarship. And we've been really fortunate to have some great donors. We had a great turnout. We had about 425 people show up last Sunday. We did sell some Epic Burger, Epic donated food, Pepsi donated food, some drinks and some candy and some chips. We had some hats and some magnets and some stickers and dozens of raffle items. Let Us Entertain You, Gibson's, Rosebud, TaylorMade Golf, Peter Millar. We had about 100 of, you know, my contacts in the city that were generous enough to donate raffles. And it was a great turnout. It was a great event, great to see friends show up that I hadn't seen in a while. Neighbors show up.
Yeah.
Come
yeah.
and tell some stories about Hallie.
Well, Hallie passed away because of a rare type of cancer. Are the funds then dedicated to research or families in that area, or where does the money go?
Yeah, so again, we want to give money directly to people. There's obviously some amazing charities that do raise money for research, but we would love to give directly back to people. So anyone who, you know, might have any, you know, medical condition, whether it's a rare cancer or anything, we want people to, you know, fill out this application, show that they, you know, had some similar characteristics to Hallie. You know, Hallie loved to help the underdog. You know, tell us why, you know, we should, you know, choose you, mm-hmm. Whether you're a student, whether you're a camper. You know, Hallie went to a couple of different camps. And some of those things really shaped her. You know, you might think camp is really, it's a luxury thing to do. But it's a really important part of people's lives to go to summer camp. And not everybody can afford it. Certainly living up on the North Shore, you know, you might think that people, you know, but not everybody can afford to go to college or can afford to go to medical school. So we want to help people in need, no matter where they live. Obviously, my daughter went to Deerfield High School, and we'd love to be able to, you know, this money specifically was raised for a Deerfield High School student to go on to college and go do some better things with their lives. My daughter had taken the MCATs, and she was on her way to apply to medical school before she got sick. She was actually working at Northwestern Hospital in the ER. It was her dream job. So we'd love to be able to help those who maybe want to go to medical school as well.
All right. So we'll remember
others.
Hallie225.org is the website. You can fill it out there. You can find out more. Hallie. Dot, is it dot then 225? No, Hallie225.org, right?
Yep, Hallie225.org. That's correct.
All right, David. Sorry to hear that. You're doing the best you can with that circumstance and continued success at Epic Burger.
Thanks very much. I appreciate your help and have a great weekend.
Yeah, you do too.